Hi there, welcome to Victim to Victor, the podcast dedicated to empowering abuse survivors and inspiring healing, hope and positive change. I'm Anu Verma, a published author, and in every episode I'll sit down with a guest and embark on an insightful conversation about trauma as well as practical strategies to start the healing process. So let's get started. I hope you enjoy the show. And on my show today, I have Tyler Page, who's an advertising professional and who's passionate about all things creative. She loves inspiring others through her writing, drawing, painting, and photography. She was taught at an early age that love equaled hurt, rejection, abandonment, and betrayal. She has spent over 20 years overcoming challenges such as childhood abuse, living in a car, being married to and divorcing a narcissist, and briefly dating a man she filed domestic violence charges against. Ty's life experiences led her to self-discovery and self-love that she shares in her book, F You, Watch This. The author's debut memoir takes readers through her life stories and how she began dating herself, loving herself, and traveling the world solo. Tired of choosing the wrong men, she finally chose herself. No matter the struggles her readers have gone through, she hopes to inspire others to challenge their core beliefs, to take action, to love themselves, and find their own happiness. And here is a wonderful Tyler Page, the author of F You, Watch This. Wow. Such a powerful title, Tyler. You must explain to my listeners where that originates from.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to share my story. I was 17 years old and I lived in my car and I was working full time and going to high school. I had to make a choice between working full time and picking up another job so that I could afford to get an apartment and staying in high school. So I actually chose to resign from high school, and someone that I was friends with made the comment to me that if I didn't finish high school, I wouldn't amount to anything. And yeah, I felt in that moment like, no, F you, watch this. And I've successfully, you know, become a professional writer and creative advertising agency director and an author and a podcast host. And, you know, I've done so much. Like, I've become successful. And so, yeah, F you, watch this.
Oh, I love that. What a great start. Thank you so much. Sure. So you are currently originated in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Yes. I'm in sunny Florida.
That's great. And so again, you know, thank you so much for coming on. It's an absolute honor to have you on because, you know, not only are you an author and, you know, not only are you successful in your profession, but you're also a survivor, you know, someone who's gone through some severe trauma and abuse from, you know, such a young age to adulthood. And so, you know, I really do honor how far you've come and the fact that, you know, you've written a book. I mean, it would be great for you to, you know, just give an insight to my listeners about your journey so far.
Sure. The very first line of my book actually says a lot. I was born in West Virginia to parents who didn't want me. And they kept me. But, you know, throughout my childhood and, you know, young adult life, I never felt wanted. My biological father left when I was three. I only ever saw him two more times before he passed away at kind of a younger age. My stepfather, whom my mother got involved with when I was about 3 and a half, he sexually abused me from the ages of 5 until 9 when we had to sort of midnight move to get away from him because he was abusive in more than just one way. There was a lot of physical abuse, deadly weapon threats, things like that against my mother. And so we left and, you know, started a whole new life, and it felt great. You know, like my teenage years, you know, they were not bad. You go through the typical bullying and things like that. But, you know, and I thought, here's this great opportunity to just like finally be a kid. And I disassociated with that little girl who experienced so much trauma, being kind of held captive inside while my older sister got to go out and play with her friends, you know, and my mother was at work or in school, and my stepfather would just, the things were, it actually took a toll on my sex life as an adult, you know, just being nervous, cautious,
yeah,
responsible, irresponsible at times. Mm. And it really just misshaped my beliefs of love. Yeah. So I have had a run of healthy relationships that I exited because they were healthy. And it's so funny how, you know, a healthy relationship for me was not an option because it didn't feel familiar.
Yeah.
So I got, I met the man of my dreams in 2016, and we, you know, got married in early 2018. And then the mask of the narcissist started to peel off. Okay. Now, I won't say that there weren't red flags in the beginning. There were, but that was what was intriguing to me. I think it was like the challenge that I'm going to make him this man that loves me. And, you know, there were lots of great times, and there were lots of probably very genuine signs of affection and love. But in the end, it just became a lot of lying, a lot of gaslighting. I don't know. I guess that's all considered sort of verbal abuse. But, you know, everything was my fault anytime I caught him in something. And it was very painful for me because I felt like I sort of grieved the loss while we were married. Okay. Yeah. So,
all right. So you said, like, you know, that you used to catch him out. Was it like, was he being deceitful, betraying you?
He was. And I always sort of, I always felt deep down, and my intuition was always right, that, you know, when he would go on these trips out of town, you know, with the guys, and I'd catch him in a lie, or he wouldn't call when he promised me he would. And, you know, I know my own insecurities contributed to some of that, because it's like, I was raised to feel insecure. So naturally, I was looking for reassurance, and when he didn't give it to me, it made me question things. And then there was just things like, this is hilarious. I'm sorry. Like, he was at a nightclub, and I saw a photo of him on Facebook with like all these girls and liquor bottles, and like, that's okay. I mean, I understand, and I'm secure enough that, like, I know that my partner can certainly go out with his friends and meet other, you know, meet girls, and that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But he wasn't wearing his wedding ring in the picture.
Okay.
Yes. And I'm like, where is your wedding ring, dude? And he tried to tell me that the nightclub photographer photoshopped it off.
Oh, please. Oh, man.
And I just thought, oh.
Oh, wow. I mean, oh my goodness.
Like, I was not born yesterday.
Honestly, it just, honestly, whatever, you know, what you're saying now, yeah, it brings back memories about my experience with my narcissist who did the same. He'd be out taking photos of all these girls, and then I'd be trying to call him to see how he's doing, like, you know, throughout the whole holiday. And then apparently they all decided to leave their phones in the locker and not take the phones out.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And it's like, in this day and age, you don't do that. You just don't do that. Like, that's.
So, yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, that's what you call manipulation. Gaslighting.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's, and then of course, if you question it, it becomes your problem. Like, well, you know, you're crazy. You're crazy if you think I'm lying. You're crazy if you think I would do that, you know, ignore you. There's all these like implications that they've throw back at you. Oh, yeah. I lied when you catch them. I lied because, you know, I don't know if you can handle the truth. You've had such a hard life. Like, I'm a freaking grown ass woman. Oh. And I have the emotional intelligence to handle anything you throw at me.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so that just proves to me that you don't trust me with the truth.
Yeah.
And that's like an insult.
It is. I mean, did you find that he was bringing up a lot of your past? I mean, did he know about your past, your childhood?
He did. And it's so funny because going forward in life, I don't know how much, I mean, it's all out there. I mean, I wrote a book, so everybody knows now. I have no secrets and, you know, it's all out there for the whole world to read. But I know now what to look for a little bit better in terms of a partner, which I'm not looking at all right now. But when I get to that point, having my childhood or anything I've been through in my life thrown at me or used against me for the benefit of the other person is absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I want my emotional intelligence and the fact that I'm very self-aware and I've overcome so many challenges to be acknowledged and appreciated and not used against me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, when you were that innocent child and you had those bad things happening to you, what was going on with your thought processes? I mean, I don't know if you remember that far back or, you know, later on. I mean, was there any self-blame or any guilt kind of emotions that you were going through?
I think the guilt is, I mean, I know that I was a little girl and I think in therapy, I felt guilty for a while and I felt like it was my fault. My biological mother told me when I was a teenager that, you know, I had asked her if he was going to be my new daddy.
Right.
And so I'm not saying she necessarily blames me for it, but that didn't feel good because if I hadn't asked her that, you know, she wouldn't have stayed with him. She wouldn't have married him. And it's like, well, are you trying to place a little blame on me or push back to say that like I had anything to do with this? So yes, I definitely felt guilty, but I also know that like when my therapist brought up to me once, she said, think about any little girl, you know, that's like 5 or 6. So I thought about it and I know a little girl that age, you know, at the time she's older now, but, and she goes, you know, no, imagine if something like that were happening to that little girl that, you know, and I just immediately like broke down because, oh my gosh, like she's just this little innocent little girl. And, you know, for me to be an adult and think about my 5 or 6 year old self, I think, well, I know I'm smart now, but why wasn't I smart then? Well, because you were freaking 5, you were 6. You didn't even know that what was happening was wrong. You just knew that, you know, it was a secret and that if you told anybody, whoever you told would die.
But yes. The threats. Yeah. You're scared, aren't you? And
I've disassociated and blocked a lot of it out, but I do remember little things. There have been triggers throughout my life here and there about things. He died in January of 2009. And that summer when I found out, I went and danced on his grave.
Wow.
Wow. I did.
That's powerful.
And that was actually really therapeutic.
Was it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just to stand over him, just to stand over his dead body and be the woman I am today. Well, this was 13 years ago, but like to be the woman that I was in that moment. And I hadn't even really become the woman I am today, but knowing that I was in that position, I was on the little, like the launch pad to this successful, smart, funny, talented, capable, self-aware, pretty woman I knew that I was becoming, and to stand over him.
Wow.
Not having let what he did to me as a little girl really truly affect me as an adult. Has it affected relationships? Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah. Wow. Sorry.
No, that's wow, that is powerful. I mean, yeah, because there's a movie out which, you know, and it says, I stand on your grave. And again, that's about empowerment as well, about a woman, you know, gaining empowerment. And so it just, yeah, it reminds me of this.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So what age did you start to seek help?
Oh, gosh. I was 11 when I finally told my mother about the abuse.
Yeah.
I waited a couple of years after we left because I was still sort of scared that he might come back around, or that if I told anybody that he would hurt them or me. So I started therapy when I was 11, but I didn't want it. At 11 years old, I wanted to be 11. Yeah. So I felt a little forced. I went for, you know, I don't know, maybe a year or so when I was 11. And then things shifted with my biological mother quite a bit as I was a teenager. She just, you know, I lived in my car when I was 17, because I think at the time she just didn't really want to have kids anymore.
Right.
And I, being the little audacious little 17-year-old that I was, like, no problem. I got this, you know, I'll go live my own life and do my own thing. I was ready to start my career and just do whatever I had to do. I was 17, but I was like, screw it. Let's go. I got this. So crazy, but that's how that happened. And then there was a lot of disconnect with my biological mother for years, back and forth. I finally made the decision that it was a very unhealthy relationship for me. So I wish her well. I don't want to, you know, throw her under the bus by any means, but I just don't feel like she was a very good mother.
So it sounds like you had to grow up really fast.
I did. Mm. I definitely had to grow up fast, and I accepted that challenge. You know, I was kind of ready to be an adult. I know a lot of people want to go to college and party, and, you know, not me. I was like, no, I'm ready to work.
Yeah.
I love to work. And I knew that college was going to be tough. Knowing that college was going to be tough, I spent a lot of time working in the studio at the newspaper office and taught myself all of the programs, Adobe programs, studio software, writing skills. You know, I, as soon as the internet age came about and I was able to really use the tools to teach myself the skills that I knew I would need to be successful in my professional career, which is, I'm an advertising agency director.
Anything.
Yep. And so I've always been very creative. So I've always loved to write. You know, I used to write poems as a kid, and even little like short stories, and I had a typewriter and, you know, all that good stuff. So it's just kind of built into my blood. It's in my DNA to be creative. So I spent a lot of time teaching myself the skills until college was an option. And even college was not easy for me. It wasn't something that I really enjoyed. So I always felt like, I hate to say this, but I always felt like I was even more advanced than what I was being taught. And I'm a self-starter. And then I owned my own agency for 13 years. Everything was great until I met my ex-husband, and the first year or so, maybe 2 years, everything was great. But then like the personal struggles that I started to experience with my husband started carrying over into my professional, endeavors. Just, I got brought down a lot. It was like, I constantly had to ask him to support me and to be there in ways that he was not. Eventually I got divorced in 2019. It was after he had told me, I caught him in a lie, another lie. And I said, why are you treating me like I'm disposable?
Yeah.
And he sent me a text message back and said, you've earned the title of disposable.
Oh goodness. Wow.
So yep. Filed for divorce the next day, and freedom, right? You'd think.
Freedom. Wow.
I did my own thing for a year. You know, COVID hit, so it wasn't exactly the most fun year of my life. Mm. But at the end of 2020, I started dating a guy who, he was, thought he was the hottest guy you've ever seen. Like, he love bombed me. The first couple of months were fantastic. We didn't move in together, but I moved to be closer to him because I thought things were so wonderful. Then I learned that he had a felony conviction for aggravated assault, domestic violence, as well as charges brought against him for interfering with a 911 call and use of a deadly weapon.
Oh boy.
Okay. So I took a pretty big step back, but started planning, you know, an escape sort of, and also wondering, because he said, oh, she made it all up. She's just vindictive. She's a disgruntled ex-partner. But it wasn't even a month after I found out about his prior that I experienced his abuse myself. So then obviously started planning an escape. It took a couple months, but I was able to, you know, break things off and move across the country. He moved across the country 2 weeks later and followed me. Yep. And in my trying to have a little hope and like keep things amicable, I told him when I found out he was moving, I said, don't you dare move here for me, because I didn't want to tell him because I was so nervous, but like I moved to get away from him. And, you know, he kept saying, well, I've always wanted to move. I've always wanted to. And I said, well, as long as it's not for me, you know, I can't keep you from doing whatever you're going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he started hanging around my social circle, going to the places that I used to go. And sure enough, I got it. He destroyed my security camera inside my home. And then proceeded to, you know, be aggressive and violent. And I had to file charges against him.
Okay.
Yeah, I was actually training for a 5K, which is, a lot of people kind of laugh at that. They're like, that's nothing. I can run a 5K tomorrow. And I'm like, yeah, not me. I'm not a runner.
Exactly. That's an achievement, girl. Celebrate. Yeah.
But I ended up going to the 5K, but I wasn't able to run because he hurt me that bad. I couldn't continue to train. So I was in bad shape for a couple of weeks.
Oh boy. So he was proper beating you up, like with his fists or?
No, he was, he pushed me and really hard, and I hit the wooden frame on my couch, kind of bounced into the floor. But before he did that, he put his face, he would put his hand over my face and he would put his face on my face. Which with force, and it was very, and I kept kind of taking step backs and asking him to please step back, and he just wouldn't. And then, you know, finally he just shoved me so hard that I hit the floor. And my neighbor downstairs heard everything. And
yeah, I was going to say, where was the police in this?
Yeah. He hid my phone from me.
Right.
So I couldn't call for help. He destroyed my security camera. I found my phone. It was in my car. It was in between the console and the seat of my car, but I only found it because after he finally left, I got on my Mac.
Right. Okay.
And the first thing I did was I pulled up my phone app on my Mac and I started calling my friends. It was 4:19 in the morning.
Wow.
And my one closest friend, she was there within 30 minutes, mm-hmm. You know, at 5 a.m, she is showing up, and I, you know, kind of went, I had to do the find your phone. And it was like, well, where it's in my car this whole time. How in the world he managed to get it from my purse and get it into my car when we were, you know what I mean? We were out. Yeah. And I kept telling him, you need to go home. Go. I don't care how you get home. Just go home.
Right.
And he was adamant that he was coming back to my apartment with me. And
goodness, okay.
it was a tough night.
I was going to say, is it quite difficult bringing this up now?
I mean, I think the most difficult thing for me is the fact that, you know, the aftermath of it was horrendous. I couldn't leave I basically was imprisoned in my apartment, because for the next week or so, I'm sitting at home trying to heal. I'm crying. I'm upset. I finally decided to go and meet up with some friends on, you know, about a week later. And I find out he's been running around my social circle, telling everybody, like preemptively explaining what he knew I would eventually come forward with, which is what he did to me. So he was like, oh, she's going to tell you guys that I pushed her. I know, I already know she's going to do that, but she just fell. And telling them like, oh no, you know what? I blacked out. I don't really remember. Trying to tell people that I was doing something like with my arms and I lost my balance and fell over. Like, yeah. So he got ahead of me. And my social circle there, you know, not really like my super close friends, but just people that I knew.
Yeah.
You know, they believed him before I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm out. Yeah. I don't care about these people anymore. They don't have any value in my life. Mm. And if you're not going to believe someone you've known for 2-3 years, but you're going to believe this guy, he's charming, he's good looking, he's 6 foot, some whatever. And you know, the eyes, and he's charming and manipulative, and he's going out buying everybody drinks and appetizers and doing all this. I'm like, you should be saving your money because you need an attorney, dude.
Wow.
It turns out. Yeah. And as I would find out later, from a girl that he started dating a girl, that I knew who she was instantly within a week. And I'm friends with her now. I like, we're actually not great friends, but like, you know, we talk on the phone, we text each other. I have forgiven her because she was definitely part of a lot of it. Like, she was a part of it in the beginning. She believed him, and she, you know, was helping him hide from the police. She was, you know, calling the police, letting him use her car, to escape, you know, to not get arrested when there was a warrant put out, things like that. And now she has actually told me several things. Like, he had to borrow money to hire an attorney. He had to borrow money or do a bond, you know, do the bonds for the $500 bail bond, which, well, it was 5,000, but like 500 would be the minimum, I guess, to get out.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, you're spending your money trying to convince people that you're a good guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then borrowing money because you're not a good guy. It's just screwed up beyond belief.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, it's just so common for, you know, these narcissists to act this way, because they'll convince their current partners, and, you know, and they're so convincible. Like you said, it is because they're good looking, and, you know, they portray this confident image, whereas really they're suffering inside. We know that now, don't we? That they're really suffering inside. But it's so toxic. And it's strange, because I've heard about this a lot. I mean, I did the same, where I've actually got together with these girls, because it's kind of like a support group, and, mm-hmm. you know, we're there to empower each other and to, you know, just, it's just nice. It's nice when women get together.
I'm good friends with, his ex-fiance as well, who has the criminal, she has a felony conviction against him.
Okay.
Right. He was the one who he told me, oh, she made it up. She made it up. Well, I'm friends with her now, and I know everything she went through. And I have a lot more information on things that I witnessed that made me uncomfortable, and things that she shared with me align with it. Like, she said that his mom used to come and get into the middle of their fights and have to, like, it was freaking weird. Like, would stroke his face and say things like, come back to me, baby boy. Jesus is with you, baby boy. Like, this is the shit that horror movies are made of. Like, what?
Wow.
What?
what is that?
Yeah. And she basically thinks, you know, her theory is that something mother related had him screwed up from a very early age. And I don't know. It's a theory. We don't know. But I witnessed things like inappropriate touching between the two of them that I even called him out on it one day. I said, I'm really uncomfortable with the way you and your mother touch each other inappropriately. And he would say, oh no, well, you know, it's just my mom. Like, I'm going to give, I want her rubber shoulders and rubber legs and things like that, because yeah, weird. Like, Whoa.
Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes something's off right there. Like I literally was like, oh my gosh, this is like, this is what we see in horror movies. Like
it is.
So, and they defend him and they'll always defend him. I think the one thing that his ex-fiance told me was that they definitely did tell her. She was with him for much longer. I was with him for 4 or 5 months. She was with him for almost 2 years. She said that there were things like, oh, they flat out told her, we know he's a monster. Everything he touches, he destroys. And I've even learned of the new girl, a different new girl, that I know who she is. We have mutual friends. She's part of the social circle that I used to be friends with as well. She is experiencing his abuse now, or I don't think they're together anymore, but like I even got tipped off that like he strangled her. He's kicked down doors. He's hurting her and he's hiding devices. Okay. Like he's taken it further than just the phone. Now it's the map. Like he learned from me to make sure to hide any possible way to communicate with authorities. Yeah. It's escalating and I'm fearful that he's going to truly hurt someone beyond just physically, but possibly, you know,
murder. Absolutely.
Yeah.
They get worse,
scary.
Don't they? They get
worse. Like. Yeah, it's very scary.
It is. God bless. So was that the last relationship? Okay.
Yes, so, I have not had a relationship since. I've been in a relationship with myself.
Oh yeah, fantastic. Yeah. I know that's what I'm interested to find out because look, with all this ongoing trauma, it's bound to have had like a knock-on effect on you. How has it impacted your life in general? And, you know,
I mean, I got to this point where I thought, okay, no matter how smart I am or no matter how self-aware I am, something's not working. And I had to just really dig deep to figure it out. And it's like, you know what, Ty? I don't think you really love yourself as much as you think you do.
Yeah.
I've always had a level of confidence about me, you know, in personal relationships and in professional relationships. And you can fake confidence, I think.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. But you can't fake self-love.
No.
Not really.
Not at all.
You can tell yourself that you're taking time to be single and happy and you're taking time to yourself for a while. I definitely did. I said that for different periods of time throughout my life where I was single, but in the back of my mind or down somewhere deep down in my heart, I was secretly sort of looking around like, where is he? Where's the next guy? Where's my next ego boost? Where's my next, you know, boost of confidence from someone else or a bit of reassurance or validation? Where's it coming from?
Yeah.
So even though I certainly spent time by myself and, you know, kind of, I don't know if it's that I pretended maybe like I was happy single. I wasn't.
No.
I was being a little dishonest with myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the last year I was like, no, I'm not, no dating apps, no interest, no, I'm not looking around every corner. I don't care. I'm going to be in a relationship with myself. It was very hard at first.
Yeah.
I had to start doing things like opening up dialogue with myself, becoming my own friend and getting to know me and talking to myself in the mirror, talking to the little girl that went through the trauma and saying things to that little girl that like, through journaling and things like that, like talking to that little girl who felt ashamed or guilty, and saying the proper things to her that no adult ever said. When I was a little girl.
Yeah.
Touching myself. I know that sounds weird, but even just like holding my own hand sometimes just to say, you got this, you know, I'm holding my own hand in this journey.
Yeah.
Going and taking myself out to dinner and ordering the dessert, buying myself the flowers, you know, all the things, curling up on the couch and watching a movie or reading a book.
Yeah.
Without having anyone around and being okay with it. Dancing. Why not? Just dance around. Nobody's watching. Who cares?
Yeah. you like you said, solo traveling as well. I think that's amazing.
Oh my gosh. Oh yeah. I went to Guatemala for Christmas and it was all by myself and it was, oh my gosh, it was so amazing. I got a taste of it back in November. I flew up to Washington, DC for the Phil Collins Genesis concert. And I went all by myself, bought myself a single ticket, got a hotel room, spent 2 days just, you know, all over DC. I went to the concert. It was amazing. I'm like, I got to do more of this. So I booked a solo trip to Guatemala.
Amazing.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I just did. And I loved it so much that I became sort of addicted to it. So
I'm a solo traveler as well.
I'm actually in, oh gosh, I've got 12 days to go. I'm going to the airport with a carry-on suitcase and no idea where I'm going to end up.
Amazing. Free spirit. That's the way to be.
Well, May 16th will be the 1 year anniversary from the ex-boyfriend who physically assaulted me. And I don't want to be at work that day. I don't want to be at home. I want to be doing what I'm doing best right now, which is living my best freaking life. Woo-hoo! And I want to be, I don't know where I'm going to be, but a year ago, I was this totally different girl. And look at me now. Like, this is amazing. I wrote a book. I have hundreds of people reaching out to me, telling me, oh my gosh, your book is amazing. It's inspiring. I read it in 1 day. I just feel so inspired now. And oh my gosh, I related so much to things that you've been through. And I cry tears of happiness almost every day, getting strangers reading my book and telling me how much it meant to them that I was vulnerable and sharing my story and all the self-love journey that I've been on, that I include in the book and how I'm helping other people. I love it. So I'm excited to celebrate.
Nice. Yeah. And I can feel that. I can feel the energy and just how empowered you actually are. And you are, you're an inspiration to all of us. The fact that no matter what you've been through, you still can be this amazing being who isn't dependent on anyone but yourself.
Exactly. Took a long time to get here, but I'm here.
Wow. I love
and it's that. It's an ongoing journey. It'll never end.
Yeah.
And I've realized that, you know, it's not, you know, the journey to self-love is, you know, it's infinite.
It is. Yeah. And we're constantly growing, you know, we're constantly learning. And, you know, for me as well, it's been this, you know, spiritual growth, which has been really important for my self-love journey. And just amazing. Like you said, just falling in love with yourself again. And it is. It's amazing. I'm so glad. And so what are you doing now? So you obviously you have a podcast. Tell us about all of the amazing things that you're doing.
Well, I mean, I work full time and some weeks it's more than full time. But almost every free minute I'm writing, currently working on the sequel, which will be, so every title of my chapter in F You Watch This is the effery that is, you know, whatever. So it's the F-C-K-E-R-Y, the free that is, you know, whatever. And yeah, I'm living an effery free life these days. So I'm writing the sequel and it will be my effery free life. Like no more F's.
Yeah.
And I'm also publishing a journal that people can use as prompts to find their self-love. It's almost everything that I've done for myself. And I'm hoping to have that published here in the next month or two. I also am writing publishing a journal for teenagers.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have found that in my journey to self-love, I've talked to my teenage self quite a bit.
Right.
Okay. And so many things that I wish I had guidance and support as a teenager that I feel like could be really beneficial for teens who are aspiring to be better than whatever childhood trauma they've experienced. Yeah. So those journals, they will be available for sale, but my focus there is to just donate to troubled youth organizations where there are, or women shelters where teens are there. For every adult journal that I sell, I want to donate the teen versions so that these kids, you know, have a chance.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm working on right now.
I think that's important to actually get, you know, teens to write again, because everyone's so, you know, computerized.
Yeah. Very true.
And you're hosting a podcast as well?
I do. I haven't actually recorded one in a while because I've been so busy. I have not had an opportunity to. It's FUWT Talk. So it's FU Watch This Talk podcast. Nice. It is available on all the platforms. I just haven't recorded one in a little over a month now. The last one that I recorded, if I'm being honest, the last one I recorded was a solo. I've had some great guests, but I recorded a solo, and it was about triggers.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It was only a 15 to 20 minute recording, but it really, I don't want to say it pushed me back at all, but it definitely hit hard.
Did it. Wow.
And then I had a book release party and I had to travel and then work got busy. And I'm like, I need to get back in the swing of my podcast. I just haven't had time. And I've been really overwhelmed with a lot of other things going on. I'm trying to stay focused on the success of the book and writing the new book and then the solo travel and my full-time job. And, I also own a virtual trivia company and I host virtual trivias, like, you know, a couple, three times a month or so. So I have to carve out time for that. And
my goodness, you're a power woman. And I'm so glad that you haven't got anyone to knock you back anymore. You know, you are limitless. You can just go and do whatever you like now. Isn't it? It's such an amazing feeling.
It is. It's very liberating. I love it.
It is. Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Yes. And so how can my listeners find you?
I am on Instagram at Tyler Page, TYLARPAIGE. I'm also on TikTok.
Nice.
I have an interesting TikTok following or stories. I share a lot of my stories on my TikTok and they've definitely gotten a lot of views, millions, in fact.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
And then my book is on Amazon. There's a Kindle version and a paperback, and I'm currently also recording the audiobook. So that's another big project that I'm in the middle of as well. So busy, busy. But the book is called FU Watch This, and it's available on Amazon. Check out the reviews. Mm-hmm. Everybody's loving it. It's exciting.
It is, absolutely. So everyone, please do go and check out Tyler Page, an inspirational woman who has overcome the most horrendous obstacles which anyone could ever face from such a young age to adulthood. And I just think that you're an absolute legend. And I'm so glad that, you know, you are where you are today. And I feel like the universe has sent you here and
made you who you are.
So, wow, girl, keep thriving.
I call us the Survive and Thrive Tribe.
Yeah. Love that.
That is
our title of your next book. Amazing. So thank you so much, listeners, for your time today. And you know, I hope that, you know, you found that an inspirational podcast episode. And please do get in touch with myself or Tyler if you have any questions about this episode. We would love to hear from you. So on that note, we will have to call it a day. So thank you so much again. I shall see you on the next show. Stay empowered, my friends.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Victim to Victor. Subscribe so you don't miss out on new episodes. And be sure to follow the podcast on socials to keep updated on what's next. And share Victim to Victor with family and friends to help grow the community and spread the positive healing energy.